The holidays are usually billed as a time of year to be with family, for better or for worse. It can be a difficult season for people who grew up with strained or abusive relationships with their parents. And it's especially hard when those abusive parents are starting to get older and may need some help financially or otherwise. Emily Yaffe is with us now to talk about grown children dealing with abusive parents around the holidays. She's a contributing editor for The Atlantic and was the Dear Prudence Advice columnist for almost 10 years at Slate. Emily, welcome to Central Time.
Nice to be here. Cheerful topic we have, right?
Well, that's why it's such a rough time of year, because you expect this to be a time of joyous togetherness with family, but it's not that way for a surprisingly large number of people, right?
Right. And as Dear Prudence, this time of year, I would always get a lot of letters from people really torn up about what to do. I mean, just in the larger issue that everyone is saying, oh, are you going to go home for the holidays? And then, you know, more specific, what do they do? Do they spend holidays with parents they'd rather not speak to? Do they try to put it behind them? It can be very difficult if you grew up with abusers.
And one thing that you point out, as you have over the years, is that the children of abusive parents, the adult children, they often feel isolated because they feel like everybody else is in these Brady Bunch families. But it turns out there are a lot of people who are going through this, but they just don't often talk about it.
I wrote a long story for Slate a couple of years ago now about what do adult children owe these now elderly abusive parents. And I literally, there were hundreds of comments from people saying, I thought I was the only one. I never talked to anyone about this. People would write to me personally, and I would have to say, you know, sadly, I'm sorry my story helped you, and you are really not alone.
We know that there are all kinds of different situations, and there are all kinds of different ways that the abuse can play out over the years. There can be physical abuse, there can be verbal abuse. But do the adult children have anything in common once they're grown?
Well, I looked at a lot of the studies, and obviously you don't need to look at a study to know that that kind of childhood can be absolutely devastating. And a lot of the people I spoke to had siblings who really were crushed. But what struck me was I was hearing from the people I think of as phoenixes. They rose from the most distressing circumstances, and over they said, you know, I've built a good career. I'm happily married. I have children. And now they're kind of grappling with these elderly parents and the needs they have. So, you know, we all can understand that people who grow up in abusive homes can repeat those patterns and have substance abuse problems themselves, or, you know, have broken relationships. But I was struck by the fact that childhood abuse does not write the whole script for your life, and how many people manage to overcome this.
Well, there is this, I guess you call it a trope or common wisdom in our society that it's good to heal the past, and you can heal the past by forgiving the person, often by reincorporating them into your life after maybe you've gotten some therapy and some perspective and you know how to set boundaries. But is that always the right answer?
In the years I did Prudence, I came to be kind of the anti-forgiveness person. Of course, I'm in favor of forgiveness, and forgiveness can be a wonderful thing. I think it's a two-way street. And what I often see is that the people who truly were victims of terrible situations are the ones who are put under pressure to forgive. Well, the forgiveness has to come from an acknowledgement and an asking for forgiveness by the wrongdoer. And that seems to be widely missing in our society. And I also, from hearing from so many people, people who tend to have been horrible parents tend not to be the people who can look at themselves and say, gee, I was a horrible parent, and I'm sorry you didn't have the kind of childhood you should have. So often these now adults who grew up in abusive circumstances are being pressured to forgive people who won't even acknowledge what they did.
So you're saying if someone hasn't asked for forgiveness, doesn't realize maybe even that they did anything wrong and scarred another person, then how do you forgive them?
Well, I don't think a lack of forgiveness means being psychologically stuck. I think the person who is abused can see the situation for what it was, accept that's what happened, say, I'm not going to be stuck there and relive this over and over. I'm going to move on and do something more with my life. But this did happen. I just don't think it's necessary for forgiveness to be part of the healing. Now, for a lot of people, it is. So what I feel is that people need to do what's best for them, for their healing, and for their mental health. So if people don't want to forgive, they shouldn't be pressured into it. If people feel, I feel stuck unless I do forgive, then find a way toward that.
We're talking with former Dear Prudence writer Emily Yaffe about how the grown children of abusive parents can manage the holidays. And so let's get to the holidays. Here's a season where it could be that someone is reaching out to you, a parent who's abused you in the past and wants to, you know, connect over the holidays. What do you suggest people do if this sort of thing happens and they've been abused and maybe they're not feeling terribly ready to do this thing?
I think this has to be taken on a case-by-case basis. A lot of people sort of set boundaries and limits. I will see this parent, you know, once a month under these set of circumstances. I will factor in the holidays. You know, I will only show up for X number of hours. If the parent starts drinking, I will leave. Okay, so those are people who've worked out boundaries. Some people don't have contact, and I don't, if that's what you need to do, I don't think you should break it for the holidays. So if there hasn't been contact and the pressure is coming to have a happy holiday, I think a holiday is not a good time for a rapprochement. Much better to have some neutral day where you set a time limit to be together because the holidays are so terribly freighted.
And people, do you think people are stressed out over the holidays anyway? And then you add this this extra pressure, and it could be a recipe for things going even worse.
Right. You know, another aspect of this is grandchildren. I heard from a lot of people who, you know, said that their big issue was, what about their own children? Should their own children have a relationship with this abusive parent? And again, that has to be very case by case. If you had alcoholic abusive parents and those parents are still alcoholic and abusive, you've got to protect your kids. I have heard from a number of people who said their parents, who were terrible to them, have turned out to be decent grandparents. So that's a complicated thing, and, you know, they want to have that, and I think that's wonderful, and it can be very healing for everyone. But again, the, you know, now adult person who was abused has to protect him or herself even while nurturing this next generation relationship.
Let's look beyond the holidays a bit, and you talked about this a bit already, but what if there's a grown child and they have a parent who they don't have a good relationship with? There was abuse in the past, but that parent now needs help. They may be financially unstable and need some money. They may need help with health care needs. How does that complicate the matter?
I answered one question about something along those lines, and it was a mother who was just, you know, physically, emotionally abusive in every possible way. And I gave a rather brutal answer, so the wind reap the whirlwind. You know, this sometimes is the price you pay for having been, not having done the things, just meet the minimum requirement of being a parent to your own children. So what is the child's obligation. Look, we have social services. Elderly people get Social Security. There's Medicare, Medicaid if needed. So I often say that people can be a go-between, so to make sure the parent is getting services and is not homeless. But at least this country does provide for the elderly. So that doesn't have to be such a vivid concern. There are ways to get help secondhand for a parent you don't want to have any kind of relationship with.
We're talking with Emily Yaffe right now, former Dear Prudence writer, talking about how the grown children of abusive parents can manage the holidays and beyond that. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you the child of abusive parents? How do you manage that relationship with them, especially over the holidays? And what advice do you have for others who might be in a similar situation? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we're picking up our discussion now about the grown children of abusive parents at the holidays. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Do you have a troubled relationship with your parents? And how do you manage that relationship over the holidays? And what advice do you have for other people? You can call us at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we go to our callers now. Matt is first in Pleasant Prairie. Matt, hi.
Matt from Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Can you hear me all right?
Yep. A little distorted on the phone, but I think we got you.
Great. I just wanted to say, listening to this kind of touches a nerve a little bit, because when I was 7, my father died. I was a freak accident, and there were 6 kids in my family. My mother was kind of thrown into chaos by the whole death of my father, who's a great and loving father. She remarried shortly afterwards, about a year later, after he died. And a number of young children in our family, of course. And he was an abusive alcoholic. And I don't think my mother had the tools, having never dealt with somebody like this, to be able to deal with somebody who was like him. She'd never met anybody like him. You know, her parents were good, loving people. And this guy was a monster in many ways. He was just, you know, constantly berating us and beating us down. And so anyhow, at one point my mother went to had an intervention, and we, some of the children at least, went to Hazleton up in Minnesota, and where he had gone to get treatment. But one of the things I learned there helped me so much. I didn't think that there'd be anything that would help me, but there was something they taught us there, which was detach with love. Because it wasn't just the problem with my stepfather. My stepfather, I could understand, he was, you know, an angry drunk. He would belittle you. He would make fun of you. He would say nasty things to you. He would, you know, constantly, just a constant pressure beating you down. But my mother, having married him and then not defending him, was one of the things that it was very difficult to deal with.
And, Matt, detachment love, how would you describe what that is briefly?
Well, obviously, I have to deal with my mother still on a regular basis. I don't allow myself to get involved in the situation of my sister, for example, who she was 3 years old when my father died. And she's a brilliant girl. She has her PhD from the University of Chicago. But there's always been constant drama in her life. Always constant drama, and so much of this was the result of the abuse that she suffered as a child. And with her, I use the same theory. With all the things that happened in her life, with all the drama, with the drama that happens with my mother, I don't allow myself to get involved.
All right. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate that. I just want to make sure we give Emily a chance. I'm sorry for everything you've been through, and I thank you for sharing your story. And Matt has worked a long time on this, and something he said, Emily, that worked for him was detachment love. Is that something you're familiar with that other people have talked about?
Not that phrase, but this idea of detachment, of you really have to make your own space, put limits, not get pulled back into the drama. That is so important. And I, you know, one thing that I've heard from many people is that they now had spouse or friends or coworkers who would say, oh, you've got to get, you know, have closure with your mother or father. You'll feel so terrible if they die and you haven't healed everything. And I would say to people who have a friend or loved one who's dealt with the kind of childhood that Matt is describing, be very careful about pushing them into some kind of reconciliation, because boundaries and limits are really important, and it's really important for the person who was abused not to be pulled back into that old emotional orbit.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Matt, and we wish you well. And we're going to go next to Belin in Green Bay. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, just listening to the commentary and totally understanding the situation. Growing up in a very abusive family, and as a 62-year-old woman, recognizing that sometimes you're never accepted. You can learn to love from a distance, and that's the way it is sometimes. It's very hurtful.
Well, and I hear that emotion in your voice. Thank you for sharing that with us and letting other people know that they're not alone, maybe in feeling some of the things that you're feeling today. And obviously, these are cuts that take a long time to heal if they heal, Emily. What about loving from a distance and honoring from a distance for parents
and
children?
This again, you are here. I mean, your caller is 62, and the emotion is so raw. And people, as I say, my message was to the people who wrote to me, to people like your callers, do what you need to do to protect yourself, to protect the life you've built, your emotional functioning. And that often does mean, as we've heard, the distance or limits doesn't necessarily mean no relationship whatsoever. But it can, you know, this is stuff that you work out over a lifetime.
Talking with Emily Yaffe now, former Dear Prudence Advice columnist, talking about the grown children of abusive parents and what happens over the holidays and some of the issues that raises. And we had a listener who emailed, the holidays are very awkward for me because I still get together with my dad's side of the family. However, my dad goes to these events as well. And when he does, I pretend that he doesn't exist. That side of the family isn't happy with me because they refuse to believe the things that happened between my dad and I. And it's hard because he doesn't acknowledge me as his child, but has gone out of his way to make my adult life difficult. So that raises another question here. What if people in your family don't believe you, some of the things that you say happened?
Again, this is something I heard over and over. Sometimes an abuser will pick one person and just pour their venom into this person and treat everyone else all right. I mean, it's such a horrifying syndrome. I think for those people, I mean, this person who's writing, you know, examine what's best for you. If these gatherings are so painful and bring you back to feeling abused and not being believed, spend the holidays with friends. You don't have to do things that make you feel worse or worse about yourself.
Now, Emily, this whole conversation is about learning what other people have gone through, too. But you also write about, you've written about celebrities who've had abusive relationships with their parents. And sometimes it helps to think that guy is a rock star and he still had to deal with all this stuff. Can you tell us some of those stories?
Yes, as I was researching the piece I wrote for Slate, rock star indeed. Bruce Springsteen had a very difficult, painful relationship with his father, and Warren Buffett had just a grossly abusive mother. And for both, I mean, these are two icons in their fields, and yet, you know, when they've talked or written about this, it is very raw and it's, you know, still real. Bruce Springsteen, in an article, a profile in The New Yorker, you know, it said after he grew up, he would drive by the house, his old house, and just relive these horrible memories. interestingly, when he became successful, he bought his parents a new house. And I don't know if that helped heal things, but he, in this New Yorker profile, you know, there was this poignant comment from him how he still wished it had all been able to be different. Warren Buffett, the great billionaire financier.
Right, some similar things there, and we're out of time, but
okay.
I appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you so much, and I wish everyone a joyful holiday.
Thank you so much. Emily Yaffe with us there, contributing editor for The Atlantic and former Dear Prudence advice columnist for nearly 10 years at Slate.